All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk Real Estate. And I'm your host, Coach David Huffman, here with RealPurse Real Estate Coaching. And today I've got a really good special guest and kind of a professional friend as well that I've gotten to know here over the years and learned a lot from my negotiation side of things. And today we're going to be talking about negotiating in the competitive market. And, you know, a lot of the agents, especially some of the ones that I see here on that are participating today on the webinar, they are from markets that really are having still multiple offer situations. And sometimes that can mean, you know, how do you handle that with your seller if you're representing the seller? But a lot of you guys are wondering, hey, you know, if I've got multiple offers with my buyer, you know, how do I necessarily get that seller to really consider me? How do I get in that top one or two or that top one to actually get, you know, approved for that particular deal? So Greg, welcome to today's show. I'm really excited to have you on here today and for you to share your very expertise to us. And just to kind of get us started off, Greg, tell us a little bit about your background, kind of how did you get involved in the real estate side, especially the negotiation side, and we'll go from there.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure, and I've always enjoyed everything that you've done. So it's an honor to be a part of this program with you. My background is I came out of corporate world back in the early 2000s and decided that I didn't like it, wanted to get into real estate. So in 2003, I got my license in Arizona and kind of did the normal agent stuff, startup, ramp up, those kinds of things. And in about 2006, anticipated before most of my market that there was going to be a pretty significant downturn, started to see the slowdown and everything else, and positioned my team to do short sales. I've done short sales in the past. I've done a couple of short sales and basically called it. And sailing, we call it, anticipating the turns of the wind. If you can do that, you're going to get the advantage on your competition. So I went from 5 listings to 100 listings in 2007. At the same time, because I was trying to get education on the subject of short sales, quickly realized that it didn't exist.
Right.
So myself and my business partner at the time wrote a couple of short sale classes, eventually teaming up with Tom Heyman, who is the founder of the Real Estate Negotiation Institute, ended up co-writing a short sale class called Certified Short Sale Negotiator that we taught all over the country. And from there, taught all over the country for the institutes, eventually transitioning to teaching the regular classes, the Certified Negotiation Expert and the Master Certified Negotiation Expert program. In the process, taking all sorts of negotiation classes that I could so I could be the best instructor, graduating from Harvard's Negotiation Institute, and teaching hundreds and hundreds of these classes all over the country. I currently teach in Arizona, California, some Texas, Oregon, Washington, and some other specific classes on as a requested basis. So
right.
That's what I do day in and day out. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So guys, I've been an agent for about 15 years. There was not many of the, associations that I wanted to be a part of, from like an ABR or CRS or what have you. And I just really never really got into that other than if they were for continuing education. But I literally, when I heard about Greg's class at the Real Estate Negotiations Institute, I literally drove from Little Rock, Arkansas, if you remember, all the way down to Texas, down to Dallas, 3 different times to be able to go through all your 3 classes and stuff. But I will honestly give you the credit that out of all the classes that I've been to me, negotiation was one, the most important subject that I should have been paid attention to a lot longer ago. But 2 was the information that I built from that has really changed the way that I look at a lot of things. And you kind of mentioned a minute ago, kind of expecting maybe what now is the unexpected, but by saying certain things a certain way. So I kind of want to preface all this, guys, is really take a listen to what Greg is saying, because what really is the difference between getting your offer accepted or not can literally be the words that are coming out of your mouth. Just what you speak, how you say it, your demeanor, it could be the words are being portrayed on paper. And I'm sure Greg will mention that as well, the difference as far as the negotiation on paper or verbally. But really kind of pay attention to what he is saying, because these little bitty tricks, these little bitty things that you'll pick up on today can really mean the difference of an accepted offer, not having to put the buyers in the car again, not having to go open no more doors, and just working towards a closing table from that point. And it's not always about money. A lot of sellers, it's not about money. So Greg, let's just start off with a very basic question that everybody kind of has. You know, a lot of our agents are in competitive markets. And let's say that we represent the buyer, and let's say that buyer He's wanting to make an offer, and we determined again that there's not much inventory. There's going to be a multiple offer situation. We don't really know how many offers that are really going to be out there, but we really do know that there's going to be multiple offers. So what are those key things in today's market that you're seeing that really do work to get agents' offers like that accepted from the get-go?
Great question, Dave, and one that I feel is a pain point for a lot of agents around the country. I teach in some really, really highly competitive markets. Dallas, when I was teaching there, was the most competitive market in the country. I just got teaching a class the last week in San Jose, which is insane, absolutely insane. Like bidding wars to the tune of $500,000, escalations, crazy, crazy stuff that's happening like that. And agents all over the country are frustrated saying, I have no chance. The only chance I have is to throw money at the problem. So let's go there. But before we go there, let me take a little bit of a detour. I think Dave is being a little modest, and I'm gonna take you back, Dave. Dave is the first MCE graduate in the entire state of Arkansas, which is a big honor.
Back in the day,
there are less than 3,000 master certified negotiation expert agents around the country, and Dave was the first one to get it in the state of Arkansas. He did drive all this way, which is so kudos to you, Dave.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure
that it was that important.
You saw it, and I see it all the time. Agents who are brand new, agents who have been in business forever, who have taken these programs and go, that is what we do, is negotiation, right? The difference between being a door opening service and an advocate on behalf of your client is negotiation. And I can't figure it out, Dave. It's real estate is a funny industry. Because in the corporate world, negotiation is required in so many places, right? Yeah. If you can't take an MBA program without negotiation being built in. Why? Well, because they understand that in order for you to be an effective executive, you have to know how to
negotiate. Right.
Yeah. Real estate agents want to make executive salaries, but real estate agents do not want to have the executive skills. And it's a funny thing that I can't figure out. That being said, there are a lot of agents out there that are eating everybody else's lunch using these skills because they've acknowledged that this is what it takes to make a difference. So back to your question, what makes the difference? The answer is negotiation skills. Let me tell you what not to do. And let's start there. The biggest mistake I see rookie agents making, or let's say unskilled agents making, the biggest mistake they make is they think that money is the solution to everything, right? I've got a problem. Let's throw some money at it. Let's throw my client's money. Let's throw my own money, right? Let's plug holes with my commission, whatever, right? It's the biggest mistake I see rookie agents making. And let me tell you why I think that is. Because we're in business to make money. That's why we get into real estate, right? It's a means by which we can derive an income. Nothing wrong with that, right? It's people kind of try and be coy around it. It's like, well, I'm here to help clients. No, if you're more willing to help clients, to help people, you'd probably do just as well in some soup kitchen. You're getting into real estate because you're wanting to derive an income, which is great. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So the natural thought we have is I am in it to make money. Therefore, it's all about money. It's about money for me. It's about money for my clients. It's all about money. And the reality of the situation is it's not.
Right.
Money is important. No one here is being naive. Dave and I are not like here being Mother Teresa's of real estate saying, oh, money doesn't matter at all. Of course it matters. But it is not as important as we think it is, and it's certainly not the answer to every single problem. So back to your question, this is kind of a longabout detour I've taken to set up what we're going to be talking about is, hey, there are multiple offers, there are multiple interested buyers, and I am at a complete disadvantage. Therefore, the only thing I can do is get into some kind of an escalation war. And that's the example I gave you. True story. Just heard an example. Just taught a class in San Jose. A student raised her hand. She goes, two Facebook guys get into a bidding war and basically said, no, I want it. No, I want it. And money in certain areas of Silicon Valley are basically monopoly money. Once Facebook stock started doing what it's doing, it's like you have 20-some-year-old guys who have hundreds of millions of dollars. Right. So they want a house. What's the big deal, right? I'll go into escalation war, and pretty soon they end up bidding and outbidding, and the price of the house was 1.2, ended up selling for $1.7 million, right? What do you do in such a situation? Well, first of all, let's acknowledge that that's not normal situation, right?
Numbers, right.
Numbers, yeah, and circumstances too. The wealth creation in Silicon Valley right now is truly unprecedented, so we really shouldn't be looking at that as the norm. What we should be looking at is normal buyer, normal seller that are looking and considering one another, and what is it that they're looking at? And the answer is what they're considering is value. Value is something that is useful or desirable to any one party. What is valuable to you, Dave, is not the same thing that is valuable to me, is not the same thing that is valuable to people that are on this webinar. We each have our own understanding of value, and it can be circumstantial. It could be any number of things, right? So once we acknowledge that that's what value is, we go into what Robert Nookin at Harvard calls creating value or growing of the pie. This is important because the first, typically, the way unskilled negotiators look at negotiations is the size of the pie is fixed. Let's just divide it up. Right. You take this part, I take this part. It's a strong buyer's market or it's a strong seller's market. Therefore, I get most of it or you get most of it. And that's it. That's the wrong place to start. Robert Nookin will go on to say that in almost every single negotiation, there is value that is not immediately visible. And what our job is to find that value and to create that value. So in terms of, let's just look at it this way, Dave. You and I are getting into negotiation, and there are three beer bottles that are standing in front of us on a table, right? And the negotiation is, okay, well, we need to divide that up somehow. You get one, I get two, or you get two, I get one, or you get three, I get zero, right? I mean, those are really the only options that we have. What you and I need to do instead is uncover value that's not immediately apparent and to go ahead and create that value. That's what we need to do. In other words, what we need to do is find, well, I didn't realize there was more beer hiding here or more beer hiding there. I don't know where that example came from. So, but my point is that's what creation of value is, right? Let's put more value on the table. This way, we're going to have a much easier time dividing it up. Both you and I will get more. Statistics show that when you study negotiators that do these kinds of practices, they start with the other side first. They ask questions to uncover what is actually important to the other side.
Yeah.
Statistically create about 18% more value, 18%, 11% more for themselves, 7% more for the other side, which is pretty remarkable. Right. Now, I know that's kind of vague. Okay. I know that's kind of like loosey goosey pie in the sky type of thing. Got it. Let me make this specific. One of our instructors, his name is Brandon. He teaches in the Los Angeles area. He was recently in a situation where they were negotiating to buy a property. He primarily works with investors, $1 million property, basically a tear down Los Angeles area, yep. 27 offers in one weekend. Super competitive. Every single agent is doing the same thing. They're picking up the phone and they're saying, how high do I need to be? How much money can I throw? How quickly do you need me to close and so on, right? Cash, quick close. Same script that every single investor agent uses. Brandon has the knowledge to pick up the phone and call the listing agent and say, listing agent, what's going on? Where are you at? What's the problem? And the listing agent says, I am afraid I am about to lose this listing. He goes, why? It's going great. You're getting all this interest. He says, yeah, I'm getting all this interest, but my buyer is freaked out. My seller is absolutely freaked out. There's two scariest things that they've recently discovered. Number one is that everyone's paying cash.
Right.
They've owned this house for 35 years and they have no idea why all these people have millions of dollars of cash. They are skeptical.
Right.
Number two, The two scariest words they could possibly hear is quick close. They don't want a quick close. They can't afford a quick close. They don't know what they're going to do. They're freaking out. So they're thinking, you know what, let's just cancel the whole thing and revisit it in a couple of years, whenever. So Brandon starts to work with the other side, starts to say the pie is not fixed. The pie is actually bigger. What can we do? And Brandon starts to ask questions. Well, would it be helpful to your client? Start with the other side. Would it be helpful if we did a longer close? And the listing agent goes, I didn't know investors can do that. And Brandon goes, well, it doesn't matter to me what the close is. Right. We can do a 90-day close if that's helpful to you. And the listing agent goes, holy cow, yes, that would be helpful. Right. And he goes, in the cash thing, just explain to them that we have investor buyers. Yeah, we can do financing, but that's not good for you. Again, put the other side first, right? So, but Brandon says, if we're doing a longer close, then obviously we just have to buy the property at what you listed it at, not get into any kind of escalation wars. And the listing agent goes, that's fine. They're okay with it. Property's been paid off for years. This is more money than they thought they could get anyway. They're totally happy with it. Brandon ended up getting a house for listed price without going up and bidding against 26 other offers, all of which were cash. This, you know what would happen with this kind of a bidding war, right? Why? Simply by understanding what is important to the other side first and growing the pie, making it bigger.
Yeah, but it boils down to really just asking the right questions and understanding the other person. Now, we talked in your class about anchoring and how that kind of all role plays out. And I always envision in my head, I need to paint this clear picture for my opposite party. Like, what does that tell me? Like, you know, where are they moving to? What can I get out of that agent? I'll ask the agent flat out. Maybe I can get an edge because they'll tell me something they didn't tell other agents. But I really want to paint that picture in my head. And then I can suggest to my client how it is that I want to portray that to the other person as long as they're agreeing to that. And that's kind of how we go after it. But I can't even tell you how many times it's been not necessarily just about the money. Or it is about the money, but it's about the money and some other emotional things as well. But you would never have known those things if you didn't ask those right questions.
That's right.
Really.
So let's look at it. And let's contrast. What you're saying is getting after the very, very essence of what we're talking about today. Let's get after how most agents would have gone about it, right? Here's the listing. You maybe send me a text message and you say, Greg, do you have any other offers? And I'm going to say, yeah, I got 26 offers. Now, what do you do?
As a typical agent,
you go back to your client and you say, there's competing offers, throw money at it. Wrong, right? Pick up the phone. Pick up the phone and, like you said, ask questions. Get the information. Uncover. What's going on?
Yeah. So when you're in that situation, we've got one of our listeners, Cheryl. What specific questions would you recommend to agents to actually ask that other agent that's representing the seller in this case? What specific questions would you suggest that they actually ask to them to be able to help them be able to paint that picture?
Yeah, great.
I can go after a couple of them. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let's go for it.
For one, what's their goal? Like, what's the reason they're selling the house? Just give me an overall. Like, is it kids, upsell, downsell? Are we marketplace? It's another great question. Are they staying in the same place? Are they moving out of town? Do they have another place to actually go to? Or do they have an exit strategy with their current, you know, client or with their current house as far as something they want to do or, you know, move? And in a perfect world, when would they like to be into their next property? Because they may not have it, or maybe new construction, or I don't know. If it's a super competitive market, I always keep my clients a little bit kind of more open to being flexible as much as they can. So, hey, don't tell me an exact date you want to be in the property. Don't tell me an exact price. Let's paint the picture, and then you can tell me before we sign the contract that you're in or you're out, or we can overcome this or not overcome this and move forward. I want to know, I mean, what do they do for a living if I can? If I'm going through the property, we always look kind of, was there a connection at some point? With my client and that other client through that property. I mean, we're going through their property. We should be able to find something that we have in common, whether it's a pair of shoes or the military or whatever, connection point there. There's just really anything can be used in that regard. But then what the agent has to do from that point is build all that into a profile and say, now, based upon my knowledge, based upon my years experience, what is that really telling me about that client? You know, what is that that's really there for them? And then kind of putting all that together and putting that a part of your presentation. But you hit on a key for me is never doing it via text. So text, email, none of that on the negotiation side. You need that conversation back and forth to build rapport, right, for one, put a voice to it, because you're going to be probably almost three times effective if they can hear your voice verbally than anything written in writing. Mm-hmm. But then again, you're not able to ask those questions via text and really get a good understanding, because the dialogue back and forth is just not there.
That's right. Cheryl, I want to commend you, Dave. I think you're dead on, as an MC and you should be. But Cheryl, I want to commend you. You heard what we're talking about. You absolutely heard what we're talking about. And the question asking bit is not as simple as just asking questions. Deepak Malhotra is a professor at Harvard Law right now, and he's kind of one of their star professors because he's published a number of books. Last year, a book came out called Negotiating the Impossible, and a great professor. His name is Deepak Malhotra. You guys have access to him for free. There are lectures by Deepak on the subject of negotiation on YouTube. Which is the crazy world that we live in, that this caliber of information is accessible to anybody for free. But Deepak Malhotra says this: negotiation is an information game. People who know how to get information perform better than those people who stick with what they know. The problem is this, hear me on this, 95% of real estate agents have not done anything about their negotiation skills. That's a real statistic. 82% of buyers and sellers are asking for you to be a good negotiator, according to Real Trends. That's the report. 95% of real estate agents have never had a single class on the number one most important skills that buyers and sellers are asking for. So what that does for you, like Dave is saying right now, is that's what gives you that advantage. Just picking up the phone. Because why do we text? Well, because it's easy. I get it. I text. Dave and I were texting this morning. Okay, why? Why didn't Dave pick up the phone and call me? Well, because it's convenient for us to text. Mm-hmm. But most real estate agents will text and email because it's easy. That's what they're going to stick with. Well, guess what? And some agents actually say, don't call me. Guess what? I love those agents because I'm going to be the guy who calls them. Because yep. Then everyone else obeyed and listened, and I'm going to be the guy who sticks out, and I'm going to be the guy who, as Deepak Malhotra says, I'm going to be able to get more information. Cheryl, in one sense, asking questions is very, very difficult, right? I can recommend a TED Talk for you right now. Here's more free information. Look up Adam Grant's The Power of Powerless Communication. Dave, I'll send you the link, okay? You can distribute it to your members. But it's called The Power of Powerless Communication. Look that up. It's on YouTube. It's 15 minutes. 15 minutes of your life in terms of how to get more information out of people. Because you're exactly right. Dave, I can shut you down if I call you and I say, hey, Dave, thanks so much. Interested in your listing. If you don't mind, for the next 3 hours, I have 75 questions I'd like to cover with you.
Right.
Guess what's going to happen? You're shut down. Not going anywhere. Right? Well, then there needs to be skill in how we ask these questions. And in one sense, it's difficult. In another sense, Cheryl, it's as simply as be there, right? Dave is exactly right. Why are you selling? Do you have a house? How do you feel about these other offers? Have you talked to them about it, right? That was Brandon's question. How do you feel about all these other offers? Oh, man, they're freaking out about it. Really?
What are they missing? Yeah.
What's not there for them? Have you talked to many other agents? Have they seen the home? You just go from there. I saw something funny. I love what Dave said, right, about connections. This is seemingly so insignificant because in the mathematical world, it's worth nothing. But in reality, you will always work with human beings. And human beings statistically want to do business with people whom they like. And there are three categories that make you more liked by the other side. Number one is connections. Number two is cooperation. And number three is compliments. And all three of those in the mathematical world are worthless, right? They mean nothing. So what if you and I have a connection day? So what if you drove all this way to meet me in Dallas? Well, that makes that impressed me that you were the first. Right. You put in the effort. Guess what? You've got me on this webinar now, right? Because you and I built that connection. Right? Compliments, same thing. Hey, man, you did such a good job with listing of the house and took, who took your pictures, right? Again, right. It took me 4 seconds to get that out. A human side of it, the emotional side of it, suddenly I like you more. Suddenly I right. like you more. In Bargaining for Advantage, Stuart Diamond, who is a Wharton professor, says that a skilled negotiator will compliment the other side 4 times more than a non-skilled negotiator. I'm not talking about brown nosing, like the right. kind of stuff you get mm-hmm. at a used furniture store or anything like that. I'm talking about genuinely compliment. Take the time, yep. compliment the other side about something. Stuart Diamond says 4 times more you will compliment. Yep. Why?
It
because
disarms
you know
them.
That when I compliment you, absolutely.
Yeah, it disarms them. It gets them on a more of a natural level between each other. So absolutely. So, and I think the other question was, do you recommend asking to submit the offer to the seller on behalf of your buyer?
You want to take Cheryl, that one? I assume you mean in person. Yeah, I'll take a first stab at it, okay. and then you can tell me how I'm wrong, Dave. So, Cheryl, I assume you mean in person. And do I recommend it? There are instructors in our Rennie world at the Real Estate Negotiation Institute to whom that is the key issue, because that's how business used to be done. Business used to be done in person. We used to submit offers face to face and present them. Do I recommend it? Yes. Am I saying that you're going to be able to every single time? Probably not, but I have heard of multiple instances where it made the difference. Cheryl, the short answer is why not try? You know that you're 100% effective when you are face-to-face. You are 60% effective when you're on the phone, and you're 10% effective when you're negotiating or communicating in writing. That's according to some research that's out there. So why not try and get in front of them? And even if you can't, then guess what? It still makes you look like a more serious, earnest agent than right. everyone else who didn't even try. So right. As far as I'm concerned, I'd try it.
Yep. And one of my things is, you know, once I've really learned, once I'm presenting my offer for my client, the same scenario, let's say that I represent the buyer and I'm submitting this offer to the listing agent. One, definitely calling. I've already learned everything right. I went back to my client. I put it all together and I'm ready to kind of present the package to this particular listing agent. I will make sure that I do it verbally and they can hear the tone of my voice and my understanding as far as why I'm asking for these certain things, or this is why I'm recommending this or what have you. I'll ask if they have any questions about it. I will also put it in writing in hash marks of exactly the points that we are offering and why we're offering them. And the way I always look at it is as if I'm presenting to the seller specifically, since most agents really aren't that good of negotiators. They're going to take whatever I say and almost to me, like repeat it to their particular client.
That's right.
So
that's
I
right.
take that time as if I'm explaining it to the seller so that they kind of understand it, and I'm hoping they can turn around. And then the text for me is just the key points to make sure that they can kind of read back through it. They're going to hear my voice in their head and they're going to almost present it the exact same way. So I almost right. feel like I'm talking to the opposite client, you know. Yeah. I will offer that. Now, if they're struggling with it and they're like, David, I'm on your page, man, but I'm just saying they're not seeing it. Well, then I know there's a disconnect between those two, right? And so mm-hmm. I will at that point offer, say, hey, you know what? That's a difficult situation to be in. I mean, would it help? You think it'd be better for maybe me and us to all kind of all get into an office yeah. and then we can just determine at that point if it's a win-win or not a win, and we'll shake hands and walk away one way or the other. If so, I'm absolutely willing to do that. And I kind of put the pressure on them, ball in their court, to say, that would be great. Because technically, the way I look at it is that makes their job easier. So they're going to be kind of lazy. So they would love to set that up if they could, because then they could just kind of sit back. They don't have to That's get right. in any kind of a disagreement or argument or a confrontation, you know, with their client. So it's a lot easier for them to sit back and do that. But I think you do have to have the agent's permission, and they have to see the value into why that would be in their best interest too. Because ultimately they want to get the connection, or they want to get the job executed as quickly as possible so they can get paid, you know, as well.
What Dave just said is absolutely key. Let me unpack that real quick, because Dave, you just nailed something so absolutely important, and I want to make sure that does not go unnoticed. Here's how we typically think of presenting the offer in person. Hey, do you mind if I get in front of your client so that I can get the advantage for my client? Yeah, no, I don't think they would like that. We want to keep everybody's equal, right? In other words, I am entering a negotiation with my self-interest in mind. Here's what Dave did, and he did it in a very subtle, it was so natural how it rolled off his tongue, but here's how he did it. And I want to make sure that you understand the science behind it. Dave said, let me help you. A skilled negotiator always starts with the other side. And Dave said, let me help you. I am solving your pain point, not my pain point. At which point I'm going to say, like Dave said, yeah, that would be very helpful to me and to my client. Sure, come on in, right? But the difference there is exactly that. It's not, hey, I'm looking to get the advantage for my client, so let me get in there and weasel my offer over the others. Yeah, good try, Dave. Not today, right? Versus, let me help you. Let me help your clients. Surely they're curious about who these people making offers on their property is. I can be there to answer questions. It's as simple as that, right?
Right.
Or maybe I'm just old school and I like to do it this way, or whatever the answer may be, but it's in the interest of the other party, not pushing for my own self-interest.
Yep, absolutely. Turn that around. We've got another question here I didn't see earlier from Lisa. How to effectively, so we'll kind of switch it up a little bit now. Where we'll talk about, if you got a couple of minutes, I know we're running a little bit over, but we talked about representing like the buyer in that situation, but if we want to flip that into like the overpriced seller. So we're going in, we're doing a listing presentation, and we want to obviously still get the listing, but at the same time though, we want to get the listing priced correctly so it'll sell quickly and for top dollar. And so I'll let you take it first since you're the expert, but how can we negotiate with that seller? What are some ways that we can communicate to that seller to get them to see that value as far as why that's not in their best interest to overprice their property?
Well, you answered it right there, but yeah, let me...
Yeah,
you stole my thunder, but let me clean it up. Let me piggyback.
You put in more technical terms, and I see I'm a technical person. You're like, okay, in Harvard Law, this is how it was done.
Let me, Lisa. I assume the problem is this. And again, I literally Thursday and Friday I was teaching in San Jose, and one of the classes we teach, the class that I taught on Thursday, is called Advanced Negotiation Techniques for Listing Agents. And the frustration that the agents in San Jose, or actually I was teaching in Los Gatos, which is the expensive area of San Jose. So median price of a home in San Jose, California is $1 million. The area of Los Gatos where I was teaching, median price is $2.5 million. It's cuckoo.
Crazy.
So yeah, it's insane. But agents are asking the same question. They're saying, okay, sellers are unreasonable in this strong competitive market because what they see is everyone is getting these crazy prices. So I want to get the best that I can for me, right? And the natural, because sellers a lot of times are not the expert on real estate market. You are. That's why they're talking to you, right? And yes, they want to get the most money. And yes, they want to get the best terms. But as David and I have been talking, it's not always about the money. In fact, Dave, I'll send you another link. This is a really interesting one. Coldwell Banker International did a study where they asked sellers what is important to you when you're selecting which offer to accept. And increasingly, since the market downturn, sellers are saying it's money is less important and other things are more important. Why? Well, because we saw that money is fleeting.
Right.
One day I have $250,000 of equity. Next day I have $150,000 negative equity. What happened? Well, maybe money is not as important at or everything. Maybe something else is important. So increasingly, sellers are looking at other things. But the problem we have, Lisa, to answer your question, is the sellers don't know what's good for them. So yes, I've been there. You come in and seller goes, well, hey, my neighbor or that person or I heard or grandma is telling me that I should list much, much higher because that's going to be best for me. And the answer is, well, let's talk about it. What's the science behind why you want to overprice? Oh, because you think that would mean you would get more. Well, actually, statistically, it means you would get less. Let me show you the market research. And this is very important. In terms of negotiating, one of the most important things you should be on guard for is what's called the battle of wills. Battle of wills is where I take my stand and I use it against your stand, right? So let's just use an example. You're saying, I think the house needs to be listed over $500,000. And I'm going to say, that's ridiculous. The house needs to be listed under 450, over 500, under 450, over 500, under 450. Goodbye, Greg.
Right.
We're done.
You're done.
Why? Because we just argued. Instead, right. What you should be doing, Lisa, is asking questions, right?
Yep.
Okay. I heard your number. Why is that important to you? Well, I am hearing. Okay. Well, you're hearing. I am experiencing. Ask me. Well, I want to make sure I'm not leaving money on the table. Ah, great.
Now they're getting the key point.
Yeah, that's right. Now we understand the area of concern and understand the emotional motivators. And once we go there, we're in a position to help our clients or to satisfy and say, okay, so if I'm understanding, you want to make sure that you're not leaving money on the table. Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Right.
Let's talk about that. Are you aware that in some areas of our market or of our country, in some of the hottest markets, the biggest practice people use to get the most is underpricing homes? It's true. Homes are getting underpriced in some of the hottest markets all the time. Why? Because what that does is instead of having negotiation room, which is what people call it, you actually create people to negotiate with. And at that point, you can tap into that fear of loss to get the advantage for who? For you, right? Because what they see is they say, well, you just want to price the home low, as Freakonomics says, right? Because for you, you get no money from me selling the house for $50,000 less. It doesn't matter to you, but for me, that's $50,000. And you just want to get rid of this house and move on to the next one. No, I am here to meet your needs and interests, but the way I'm going to do it is using science and actual statistics, not hearsay. So what you do is you start to take it apart to understand where they're coming from and then come back at it with actual market data and research, not opinion.
Right.
Critical difference.
Well, and I'll take that one step more. And let's say that you still go back and forth. Let's say you are asking all those right questions, but seller still is landlocked on that price. You know, in this scenario that you gave was $500,000. Then my rebuttal to that is you know, everybody out there is coaching. Don't actually ever take an overpriced listing. Well, I mean, I get that. Don't ever take my little rebuttal to that is don't ever take an overpriced listing that you don't have a realistic expectation set moving forward. In other words, okay, I'll tell you what, you're landlocked on $500,000 and I can appreciate that. But given that fact, I want to make sure that we don't define insanity by having the property in the market for 2, 3, you know, maybe even 4 months down the road and never get any offer. Then we become that overpriced listing. We start doing the negotiations down or price adjustments down. Then they're going to think something's wrong with the property. They're going to see how long the day's on the market. They're going to see the multiple price reductions. They're going to determine that means that there's room to negotiate even more off of the maybe $450 price you get in 2 or 3 months from now.
Yeah.
So let's not define insanity. So let's just come up with the game plan. If I were to list your property today for $500,000, okay, it's going to take about 3 days for it to hit every single website out there in the e-commerce world. And so what I would suggest doing is, you know, within 10 days, what do you think if somebody was really interested in this property, they'd come and see it if it was priced right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's give it 14. Let's just say overall, let's say in the next 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks' time, if we don't have an interested party or an offer on the table, then you and I have to relook at that market at that time. Now, if the market has stayed the same, like all the actives, the pendings and solds, nothing's changed, right? Then we're going to probably have to be at least at 450. Okay. No questions asked. But maybe something has changed. Maybe the market does get a little bit better. I'm not saying it's going to in 2 weeks, but I will take a look at that and I'll give you an opinion one way or the other. But also be open to the fact that that market that may be 450 today, maybe 425 in 2 weeks. So just kind of keep that open. So my idea at that point is just kind of keep them open to that flexibility, but I'm also reminding them kind of both sides of the fence, you know, okay. So they understand that could be a benefit, that could be a negative part of them, or it could be still at that 450 price point, like we said in this example. Okay. Well, have a clear expectation.
And everything Dave just said, there has a common thread interwoven through it, which is, I am not doing this because of my self-interest. I am doing this for you. This is how it's in your self-interest. Show them, this is how it's in your self-interest to do this, right? So it's absolutely fundamental. And if you approach it that way, and if you've taken the time to build the trust, and if your reputation is such that the seller trusts you, I'm going to say, that sounds good, Dave. That gives me a path forward that satisfies some of my curiosities. And I can see that you're actually working for me. Let's do it.
Right. Another key point, and you did it naturally as well, but is really asking when you're in that scenario with an overpriced seller, and you're asking them kind of, okay, so help me understand, where did you come up with this number from? Well, I had a friend down the street. Okay, great. So just out of curiosity, is there something that I missed? Is there a comp someplace? Is there something? Because what I'm taking from is just basically what's in the MLS. Do you have anything that's not on this page that I can use as well? Because that may change my opinion, but I unfortunately didn't find it. Mm-hmm. Now, I know they don't have a comp, but I want to get them to tell me, no, I don't have anything else to prove this price. It's just made up in my head. So I'm getting them to agree or to basically tell me that I'm just talking out of my mouth. I'm just saying that what I want, I'm just coming up with a hypothetical number without me telling them that they're doing that. I'm asking them to admit that to me. So whatever their issue is that they're having, I always want to get them drilled down by asking the right questions to get them to admit to me they really don't have any substantial backing of what that information is. So that helps me as well.
Yep. And Lisa had a follow-up question that I want to address. Lisa's saying, where can I get the statistic? Where can I get the science and so on? I'm going to give you one of my favorite resources, Lisa, and it's free. Well, it's not free. You're already paying for it. That's realtor.org. Realtor.org. A lot of real estate agents, to my surprise, are not aware that that website is out there. We all know about realtor.com. Realtor.com is a racket where National Association of Realtors pays another company to steal your leads and then to sell them back to you. Sweet deal. Realtor.org is a site that they built for the assistance of their members. And there are a ton. There are articles, there are charts, there are graphs, all sorts of stuff. And all of that is included with your membership into the National Association of Realtors. You log into it with your Dave, I forget what it is, the NMLS number or whatever it is. It's that number that's on your realtor magazine. Yeah. Yeah. With your NAR number. It's the one that's on your realtor magazine. So log in, go on there and dig. You can dig for hours. There's a ton of stuff on there that's free. And I've seen some really, really good stuff on overpricing there. You're already paying for it, Lisa. Why not use it? So I don't know. You got something else on that, Dave?
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, as far as the numbers, she was asking about statistics I could share about the benefit of listing lower. Oh, as far as the percentages and stuff. Yeah. No, that's probably a good place for that. You know, the thing is that I can go in there and I can just show them graphs and charts and whatever. Dude, they're landlocked. You know, they're anchored in your words. They're okay. There. So it really, to me, it's more of an emotional, and I have to like make it make common sense to them as to why that's not true. Because I've walked in and had the listing presentation of all the bar graphs and everything showing why overlit. It just never did anything for me until I really connected with them to really understand and got them to almost, you know, like I said before, just admit to me they're really coming up with this hypothetical number. It's not something necessarily that is, proven. And then coming up, if I do take that overpriced listing a little bit, coming up with a realistic expectation in 14 days, if it's a really crazy overpriced, no more than 21 days, if it's a little bit overpriced, that we're going to say, hey, we're going to come back and retalk then. The other thing too is don't disappear for those 14 days or those 21 days. When you have those follow-up conversations, one of the things I teach in my coaching practices is, hey, you know, it's been 7 days since I listed your property. Give them a very realistic output as far as what all has happened with their listing. It's now on Zillow. It's on Trulia.com. So I'm going to build all these websites that it's on, all these like Remax.com, Coldwell Banker, eXp Realty. It's on Zillow. It's all over the place now. So now they have a mental picture painted like, my listing is out there. And then from that point, I'll go back into the 7-day update of what's only changed since my listing presentation. We've got this sold. Well, why do they buy this one and not ours? Well, let's look. It looked like they ended up, you know, and I kind of explained it all to them.
Yeah.
And then, but hey, we got one more week, guys. One more week. It's okay. We're not making a move right now. We're just 7 days into it. We committed to 14 days. I mean, now I'm telling the seller, no, we're not making a price adjustment now, but I'm really setting it up to make sure that next week there will be a price adjustment. So they don't think that I'm just coming at them every single time I talk to them about that price adjustment. So then in 14 days, okay, guys, let's dig in. You know, I don't call them and say, guys, it's time to do a price adjustment. I call them and say, let's dig in. Let me share some things with you and let me kind of tell you what's happened to the market since we've listed it. And then it usually always will end up into, okay, it's time to get the price down to be realistic. But we kind of come to that together. I don't tell them that's the case and then lead them to it. We come to that analogy together.
Okay, great.
You're going crazy.
It's really funny. I'm typing a response to to, because she says this is very helpful. I'm going to sign up for RENE training. Lisa, RENE training, I've taken the class and I will withhold my comments. RENE is something completely different. We are RENI, Real Estate Negotiation Institute, and our website, I'll put it in this chat box, is therenie.com. And that was actually going to be my answer to your other question. You said once the home is on the market and we get low offers, negotiating with buyers, not really in the scope of what Dave and I are talking about with the competitive market and things like that. That this is just negotiation 101. So my response to you was going to be to take one of our classes. And there's the link. I hope you see it.
TheRENI.com. And we'll say it for our podcast. It's TheRENI.com, spelled out TheRENI.com. Go ahead.
Yep. Which is Real Estate Negotiation Institute. RENE is a competitor of ours who, for whatever reason, decided to name their company one letter away, and that's their designation. I don't have the designation. I've taken some of their classes. I've flown to different states to take their classes, and I will withhold my comments, but sure. I can definitely endorse our training. So would love to definitely see you in one of those classes, Lisa.
Absolutely. So, Greg, thanks for your time today. I know we ran late on this. Some good information as well. I'll work on also getting the links for all the different places once we release this on the podcast or on iTunes and things. And guys, anything last that you want to follow up with Greg? Again, thanks for your time today. I really do appreciate it. I know you're busy and traveling and doing a lot of trainings and stuff out there.
Yep. Dave, it's a pleasure to be here. Always enjoy our time together. Thank you for all the questions. Your participation has been fantastic. I know you're engaged. You're in the trenches. We can educate our industry toward a better reputation. And I think these kind of events were critical. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know what's out there. So Dave, I can't thank you enough for facilitating this and for getting out there to everybody. Thank you.
And guys, just remember the difference between an accepted offer quickly and for top dollar, generally speaking, is literally just the words coming out of your mouth. So really practice that. That's our trait. You know, that's what we coach on, even on the listing presentation, you know, taking them through that process, that emotional process with your prospect to be able to get them to want to do business with you by the end and not just jumping. So another little quick statement that I've told several of my coaching students this week is, you know too much. You already know where they need to be 5 steps down the road. So if you're an agent and you're 5 steps down the road, get back to being basic. Okay. Yeah. I jokingly call it, get back to like simple, like conversation. They need to take that emotional journey as well. Take them through that by asking the right questions and let them experience that. That takes a little time and a little due diligence, but dude, it's going to save you a ton of time because you're not going to have to one, go on more listing appointments to get a listing or go and show more property when you already found the right one. Yep. Multiple offers, got to go find another property. I mean, there's so many variables to that. So take that time with your client. Take them, allow them the time to experience that and go through that emotional thought process to the point that they'll arrive at that conclusion kind of on your own.
So, indeed. Indeed.
Guys, real talk real estate. I'm going blank on my own show name here, man. I don't know what's going on. Real Talk Real Estate Show. Again, David Huffman and Greg Markov of the Real Estate Negotiations Institute. Guys, we'll see you tomorrow for Coaching Tip Tuesday, and looking forward to that as well. And until next time, talk to you.
Thank you very much.